Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is David Love.
This is Dr. Lana Love. Welcome to our show.
Today we've got a very special guest. We have author and public speaker Marshall Masters today.
Marshall has quite a big name in the
survivalist.
I guess he's a master of controversies. Marshall is a scientist. Is as his background, and he is very knowledgeable about various anomalies in our sky, including Planet X, Nibiru,
the pole shift,
and government conspiracies. As well, I believe Marshall is very much a survivalist and can give us very good tips on how to survive and make it through
any kind of catastrophe or global emergency. Welcome, Marshall.
Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for being on our show at the last minute. This is wonderful. So good to have you.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I always like coming on BBS. It's a good network.
Yeah, we like Doug and Dawn a lot. Doug's been on our show several times, and we really like Dawn. They're great people, really good producers, and we're glad to have them on our team.
So, Marshall, we're very excited to have you on our show. I'm a big fan of your website and your very, meticulous scientific, no-nonsense approach to everything.
You're very practical.
Well, thank you. Thank you. We don't publish as often as other people do, but when we publish, we try and do something that's worth reading. And, that's just the way I do. We have been watching, for example, this story with the winged object, and it was a huge story. It's really been artificially hyped and drummed up. And on our site, YOWUSA.com, we just published an article titled "Google Sky, a Senseless Stampede." And right out the gate, we knew this thing was a red herring, right out the gate. And what we were really interested in knowing was this something that just was an organic grapevine event, or was this disinformation hype? Was it being pushed? And so that's the reason why, a lot of folks were, Marshall, why aren't you talking about this? Why aren't you saying anything about it? We're just laying back and we're just seeing what's going on. And,
the wait and see approach.
Wait and see. Well, we were trending.
Marshall, I'm embarrassed to say I was done. I believed it. Before we go on further, I think for our listeners, some of our listeners maybe might not know about Planet X and Nibiru. So maybe where is a good place to start? I believe you're a scientist, is that right?
Well, actually, I'm a researcher. I was a former CNN science feature producer, and I worked in the computer industry. I'm retired from the computer industry. I was a systems analyst. So I do come at this with a scientific look at things, and we generally tend to, when we're analyzing these things, we want to be careful with what we're saying. There is a tremendous amount of disinformation that's intentionally injected into the conversation. People
right.
need to understand that. This is a heavily manipulated topic. And the reason why is...
Marshall, can you tell us, how long have you been, how long have you been the king of controversy, and how long have you been focusing on giving the public information that where otherwise perhaps is withheld from us? How did you start off in this way?
Well, it started in 1999. And, there's no way to go to college for something like this. You just walk straight backwards into it. And that's about how you wind up doing it. And it was the oddest thing for me. I was the first guy in my entire neighborhood back in 1999 to get DSL. that's old. That goes back. And, it took two guys from AT&T an entire day to figure out how to get it working. And as I was playing around with it, I just said, I want to find sites that are not well designed in terms of the HTML, but use a lot of graphics. So this is going to be a good way to benchmark the speed of this service. And sure enough, the best ones turned out to be folks that were talking about Nostradamus. Well, I came across a site called Millennium Group and a lot of other folks talking about what was going to be the King of Terror. Nostradamus had prophesied a comet in 1999 would be become visible during an eclipse. Well, I followed the story. It kind of got my attention. And there was a news feed from NASA, and it was in QuickTime, which is still a very, very good codec. And because I was a science feature producer, you know, I was used to watching videographers, or what we call shooters, and how they operate. And in their, when they're looking through the camera, they have what's called an overscan area. They have a little line that gives them a boundary. It says, this is what you're actually going to see on television. But outside of that, they're able to see more, and it's very useful for setting up shots. But also, when they see something in the overscan, they're like bird dogs. They'll go right to it, you know, focus on it a little bit, try and figure it out, and then they'll come back to do what they needed to do. Well, that was the case here. This videographer saw something in the overscan, went to it, was looking at it for a while, and then came back to covering the eclipse. Well, what happened was, by doing that, I saw three different objects.
And,
really? Yeah, there were three objects that turned up. Now, I reported it, did a frame-by-frame analysis, and at the time I just called it objects A, B, and C. Really original, huh? And Richard Hoagland immediately went to debunk me, and he said I was confused by flashbulbs. And I thought that was kind of funny because it's 1999. It's like, hey, Richard, you know, we gave up our Instamatics a few years ago. People have these little things called electronic flash, you know. And so I thought that was kind of corny. But that's, I mean, Richard Hoagland does that. He plays both sides of the fence. And probably he just was going to do a slam on me because he'd get something from somewhere else. And that's the way it works. And but
and it sounds like you got into it by actually seeing it yourself. It sounds like you got drawn into it very much by actually seeing the object yourself or the object.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's what pulled me in. And then what happened was a cosmonaut on the Mir space station came to my aid and sent me some footage, and all of a sudden we identified two of the three objects that Hoagland had called flashbulbs. And they turned out, one turned out to be a low orbit communication satellite, and the other one was a spent rocket booster. However, the third object turned out to be the Nostradamus comet, and because it had that horseshoe corona very clear on it. So as Nostradamus had prophesied, a comet would be visible during that eclipse, and it certainly was. That article got 5 million hits, and that's what launched my career.
Wow, and that's fascinating.
I do remember those days. I was in the mid-90s when I went on the internet, and I started seeing these back then conspiracy theories. Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Affairs, all that stuff. And I encountered the same thing you did, a lot of disinformation, deception, manipulation, propaganda. And, I mean, I actually, after a while, stopped researching these conspiracy theories until I started writing my own books. And I really don't look them up now, but I get them from people like Jonah Bolt, Starseed Radio, and Alexandra Meters of Galactic Connection. I know you know both of them, and we were on Jonah's show as special guests last night. So they do all the researching, and I try to. It's just too much information, and there's too much disinformation. So,
well, I was hoping to perhaps clarify a few things because, of course, my background is scientific as well, and I'm aware of the fact that when a lot of people talk about things, and a lot of, you know, people that have, you know, are intelligent with good backgrounds, there must be something to it. However, interpretation is a very sort of
it's tenuous.
Very.
I don't know. I was a private legal investigator for 20 years in the court system, so we tend to not take things at face value anyhow.
So let's, if we can clarify also for our listeners, and maybe I'll just perhaps summarize what I know about the system, and maybe Marshall, you could add to it. So my understanding is that, and we talk about Planet X or Nibiru, but my understanding is that we're talking about a whole system of, that's right, yeah, yep. And I understand that our sun has a twin, and we're in fact a binary system, and that most solar systems are binary, meaning there are two suns. Is that right?
Absolutely, you're on the roll. Keep going, you nailed it. All right.
Lana knows this much better than me. This is definitely not my area of expertise.
Well, it's a bit frustrating because people keep talking about Planet X and Nibiru, but there's also this sun called Nemesis, which I believe is like a brown dwarf. I believe it's quite sort of cool and, you know, in its, you know, spluttering and dying. And I, correct me if I'm wrong, Marshall, and I believe that this Nemesis, this the twin of our sun, has in its system several planets, the outer one of which is supposed to be Nibiru. Now, what I was wondering whether you could, what I understand about Nibiru is that no one really knows or can decide whether it's a planet or a sun or a comet, but that this thing is very gaseous, and it has a lot of iron in it, and therefore quite magnetic, and magnetically attracts all these other asteroids to it, so that it's got these wings. That's quite, you know, we're talking about a big messy system of lots of asteroids. And the other controversy, and something which I can't quite understand, is that many people say you can only see it in the infrared spectrum. And then you've got another mob of people that are talking about two suns that they can actually see. Now, Marshall, please explain this.
Yeah, I admit, I only see one sun in the sky myself, and I'm not, you know, curious about this. So.
Sure. All right, first off, we're in a binary star system. This our sun's binary twin is a brown dwarf. A brown dwarf is different from our sun in that it has enough mass to ignite, but not enough mass to sustain a nuclear furnace, so to speak, like ours does. And so it's more like a charcoal briquette that you'd have in the barbecue. And it bangs off kind of slowly. Now, of course, it takes a very, very long time. And the thing about brown dwarfs is that this is a predominant star in our system. They're all over the place. But they're very difficult to observe because you can only see them in the thermal range of infrared. You know, it's not, there's different ranges of infrared, but these only pop up in the thermal range. And so you have to have a heat signature. Now,
why is that, Marshall? Is that because it's just sort of like a lump of warm coal, which is black and you can't see it?
That is pretty much a good way of saying it, but it's also shrouded in a protoplanetary disk of iron, dust, and debris. So, it, you know, if you look at our Oort cloud, this is what's left over. When our sun, you know, ignited, it created this big ball of junk that is on the outside perimeter of our solar system. So you have the same thing, but this is a mini constellation. A brown dwarf is going to be a few times the size of Jupiter. It's not going to be the size of our sun. And this is, you know, what people are surprised to find out is Jupiter actually puts out more energy than it receives from the sun. And, you know, if it were just a little bit larger, it could become a brown dwarf on its own. All right, so we don't need to have as massive an object as our own sun. Now, Nemesis is a mini constellation because it has its own planets and moons. And it has, in my book, Being in It for the Species, we talk about three planets, the primary planets, and there could be minor planets as well, but we just talk about the ones that are going to be causing us problems. Those are Helion, Arbota, and Nibiru. Helion is the innermost. It's a large gaseous planet, uninhabited. Second most out is a smaller planet called Arbota. It is inhabited by a slave species that's enslaved by the folks on Nibiru, the ones we call the Anunnaki. Then there is Nibiru, which translates to planet of crossing, and it is the planet that is outermost in that system. We also in the book talk about two moons. One is we call Harrington, and the other one we call Ferrada. Now, the planets, Helion, Arbota, and Nibiru, this is what the inhabitants of that mini constellation know these planets as. We named the moons, the innermost, the one that's around Helion, which we call Harrington, and we did that in honor of Robert H. Harrington, who was the U.S. Naval astronomer, who actually wrote a brilliant paper on Planet X, had a telescope manufactured for a sky survey. That sky survey was conducted at a U.S. United States observatory in New Zealand. However, when the plates were returned, it went to NASA, were never seen again. And also he gave Zachariah Sitchin, author of The 12th Planet, an interview in a television documentary. And there are quite a few people in the field who believe that he was assassinated for this. And because he came down with a rapid onset cancer, that has been known to be used in targeted assassinations. Mm-hmm. And the other one, the other moon, Ferrada, we named after Carlos Muñoz Ferrada. And he's a Chilean astronomer who first talked about Planet X, or what he calls Hercobolus, or the Red Planet, in 1940. So there's a very good history on this. There was a tremendous amount of discussion about us being in a binary star system. I remember this when I was in high school very clearly in the 60s, and there was a very vibrant conversation in the media, New York Times, Washington Post, so forth. All of these prestigious news institutions were covering it. However, in the early 90s, with what many believe was the assassination of Harrington, then the conversation fell off a cliff and it went dark. Wow. And remained pretty much that way. So, and today, it's still something that's very heavily manipulated and controlled. But sure. Right now, what we state in our book, Being in It for the Species, is that this mini constellation right now is on the opposite side of the sun, in conjunction. In other words, it's out beyond the orbit of Earth, beyond the orbit of Jupiter, actually. And
so essentially, these are behind our sun, and therefore it's harder to see them? Is that right?
Right. It's hard to see it. Now, people, you know, one of the questions people have is, well, why is it we're not seeing it 6 months out of the year? All right. And the reason why is that people tend to assume objects move through the solar system like a train on the tracks. All right?
Right.
That's going to go around and around. This object is moving on in multiple directions on multiple axes, all right?
Oh,
it's
really?
In a comet-like orbit. Okay. And a better way to imagine how the system moves through the sky is to imagine you are at an amusement park and you're riding on the carousel. And you know the carousel goes around and around and around, but you're sitting on your little horse in the carousel and you're going up and down. So the carousel's going around and around, and you're going up and down. So you're actually moving on multiple axes, all right? You're going up and down and around and around. Now, the this mini constellation orbits our sun like Earth orbits the sun, and it orbits about every 380 days, all right? However, the up and down on the horsey, that's 3,600 lunar years or 3,548 solar years, which is what the Gregorian calendar is. And so that's the reason why right now it's, you know, we have posted images in my videos. We've had observations. But this is like ufology. All right, it's how many mountains of information can people look at and go, I'm still not sure, you know? So it's what's called normalcy bias. If it hasn't happened in your lifetime, it's not going to happen.
Right.
And this is, that's just the way it is. But on the other hand, we just recently published an article about December 21, 2012, because that was very skillfully done job of leading the public down rabbit holes. The thing about it is that what the elites want to do is exhaust people's attention with misdirection and disinformation and misinformation. The reason why is the principal aim of the elites is, frankly, to have the greatest possible loss of life. They want a dieback event. And that's, you know, and this is something that people really find hard to accept.
I've worked with federal agents on some cases and assignments, and I can tell you how committed they are to the government and how they, like private detectives, use psychological techniques to get what they want and then drop you like a bad habit after they're done with you. And it can be quite scary. They throw you away very quickly once they get the information they want. And I've also showed people in our network how easy it is to deceive people with disinformation. I put out a post once where I said, beware of the Banned Book Registry Act of 2015. The literary enforcement agents are going to break down your door and come in and take banned books from you. And people got really scared and said, they're not taking our books. We're armed and ready for them.
That was very cheeky of you, David.
It was.
Very
cheeky. But it was just to show that, you know, there's a lot of information. You have to know the difference between disinformation and relevant good information.
Now, hang on, guys. Let's just clarify a few things for our listeners and for me as well. Now, you know how we just, and I'm fascinated that Nibiru has, it moves in lots of different planes. And I wonder whether the same, that can be almost symbolic of people moving different planes. Now, yeah. The conspiracy crowd loves to say the government, you know, the government and the elite are the nasty ones. And I'm just wondering whether perhaps it's more complex than that. I mean, I'm sure that we have lots of very well-meaning people in the government and perhaps wealthy people. But
I think everyone has an agenda or a hidden agenda.
Maybe you've got the good elite and the bad elite. Maybe, you know, maybe there's multiple different factions. But you know what?
Everybody's trying to dominate the plane and everybody's trying to gain power.
What's really silly about this, Marshall and David, is if this planet is going to cause havoc with the Earth, then why on Earth lie to people? As it is, people are going to get wiped out. I mean, you don't actually have to lie about
it. Maybe because we've got 7 billion people on the planet and it's too big to manage and we're using up all the resources, which I don't think is totally true. I think there's enough room for everyone, and had things been done correctly and there wasn't so much corruption in world governments and with so many groups and organizations and corporations, things would have worked fine. That's my opinion.
Anyway, let's cut to the chase. Now, perhaps, Marshall, you could explain to people what this planetary system is well, this mini sort of solar system is likely to do. Now, I understand that Nibiru doesn't actually collide with Earth, or at least it's not likely to this time, but that the whole system exerts a huge gravitational force on Earth, which is going to shake us up quite a bit. Is that right?
Yes, and this is going to be a worst-case scenario flyby. The last flyby was the 10 plates of Exodus. That was a best-case scenario. Then there were two other flybys before that, and then going back, the next one back after that is Noah's Flood. Now, Noah's Flood was a worst-case scenario. So let me define the difference between worst-case and best-case. It really comes down to the three laws of prime real estate: location, location, location. All right. And what happens is that when this is coming up, it's in an inclined orbit. So it really was climbing up and towards the sun from the southern skies, going up at roughly about it at its 7 o'clock from where we see it on Earth. And when it comes out from behind the sun, it'll be approximately around 1:30 o'clock on the sun. So that's that diagonal movement. And right now it's arcing into its point of perihelion. That's its closest distance to the sun. And then once it reaches that, it will have completed its perihelion leg of its orbit, which is 3,600 lunar years. And then it starts heading south again. Now, if you're going down the freeway at 100 kilometers an hour, you just can't U-turn at 100 kilometers an hour and head the same direction. It's not going to work out very well for you. But on the other hand, you slow down, then you can find a turnaround. And then as you are coming around and, you know, you've completed that, changing that direction, then you can punch, you know, your foot on the accelerator, go pedal to the metal, as they say, and start speeding up. Now, that's what is going to happen. Is when it reaches its point of perihelion, it is going to start speeding up, and then it's going to arc over us, and it's going out towards where it heads south will be between Mars and Jupiter. And as it's arcing out that way and speeding up, it crosses over Earth's orbit. All right? Now, in a best-case scenario, when it is on its aphelion leg and crossing Earth's orbit, we are on the opposite side of the sun. That is what happened during Exodus. Except this time, we're going to be on the same side of the sun. And, and we are in deep kimchi. So, you know, it's going to leave a mark. Let's put it that way. Right. And what we are going to have is the biblical event, what's the 3 days of darkness. That is going to happen. And actually, that is also described by remote viewer Major Ed Dames. I don't know if you're familiar with him. And he did a Killshot video in 2004. And he said that there would be an object that would pass between the Earth and the sun. Well, that's what's going to happen. Nibiru is going to pass between us, and it's very substantial in size. So the biblical event, the days of darkness, will in fact happen. And this is about this time we're going to have a pole shift event, because the multiple objects in this system, Nemesis, Halion, Arbota, Nibiru, and Ferrata, the moon of Nibiru, are going to get a gravitational, apply tidal gravitational forces. And so there's going to be a lithosphere lock event we call the lurch. And doesn't matter what you see in the sky, everyone on the planet is going to feel that event. And that will be the beginning of the pole shift. And the
well, there's a lot of stuff out there. Everything but the kitchen sink, eh?
Right.
Wow.
I guess there's an old saying, just because you can't see it doesn't mean it isn't real. But, Marshall, can I ask you, this Nibiru, they call it the Destroyer, and something, and it's inhabited by reptilians, I guess. And
maybe you could explain
some
that.
Some people say that this is it, right? This is almost like in Star Wars, like the Death Star, and that this is supposed to be a planet that can almost be flown like a spacecraft or something.
Which might explain why it goes madly up and down in all directions.
Maybe I don't know. I'm just asking because I don't know these things, and I'm curious about what you have to say about that.
Well, it is inhabited. It is inhabited by the race that actually created us. One of the books you'd want to read is The Lost Book of Enki, that Zachariah Sitchin published in 2003. And it is actually the autobiography of Lord Enki of the Anunnaki. And it's important because we were created. We came from his loins. Okay?
Yes.
He's greatest grandfather. And if you read The Lost Book of Enki and you like Game of Thrones, it's Game of Thrones with horny aliens and spaceships. And but it's the truth of how we were created. And
you're really delivering some major blows here. Number one, this planet is going to shake us up. Number two, we were actually genetically created.
Yeah, so yep. I just want to get back to my previous question, though. Is this Nibiru, is this a Death Star that's almost flown by them?
No.
This is
a planet. Nibiru is a planet, and this flyby is going to be hard for Nibiru as well. It tears their atmosphere as it's going to tear our atmosphere. Now, we use aluminum for our geoengineering, all the chemtrail spraying, but they use gold to repair theirs, and that's what they're going to be coming for: two things, women and gold. The women will be for their slave breeding programs, and gold for repairing the ruptures that the flyby will cause in their own planet's atmosphere.
Also, Marshall, you're saying that not only is this planet going to come so close to us that we're going to have shifts in our tectonic plates, but they're also going to alight on our Earth, take our gold and our women in that order.
Yeah, they're going to walk out of here with virtually all of the refined gold on the planet. That's the reason why you see the insanity in the gold markets right now, why you see China and India acquiring gold. The Anunnaki are coming. This is not going to be a pleasant experience. This is like the mafia coming to collect the VIG. They're going to want to have plenty of gold so that they can have a good position with the Anunnaki when they arrive. It is going to be a shock and awe event. I mean, it's literally going to be very much like that movie Independence Day, where you have city ships over our capitals. And when they make themselves known, it's going to be terrifying.
Are you expecting the earthquakes and the pole shifts to come first,
followed by
the Anunnaki, or
an alien invasion,
or the Anunnaki at the same time? Because, I mean, giants that they are, I imagine that they can get shaken around quite a bit as well.
Well, they're going to come before the worst of it happens. You know the old expression, leave the party while everyone's still laughing? Well, that's what they're going to do, okay? And they're going to come, they're going to take whatever it is that they want to take, and then there will be, and I document this in the book, there will be an event that will herald their departure, and they will leave, and after they leave, that's when we really get creamed.
This is interesting. Quite a while back, I was on Dr. Edwige Bing's PBS radio show, Affirmations for Living, and she was also on our show, and she described an out-of-body experience where she came face to face with a reptilian, and this was at a time when I wasn't familiar with reptilians, and I didn't know what to make of this, because I've had classic out-of-body experiences myself where I've seen creatures that I've wondered if anyone's ever seen these things before, and they were very real, just like anything else in the physical world. So, you know, when I hear people talk about extra-dimensional aliens and invisible beings that they've seen, I can't say that you didn't see them just because I didn't, because I've certainly seen things that many other people have not seen that I know were certainly real to me, as real as anything I've ever seen. So, and I have an awareness, you know, I'm a past life regressionist, and I have an awareness of some of these things that you're talking about, that these ideas that you're talking about, they underlie many religions and many different group thoughts. About, you know, creationism and human origin. So,
yep.
What I'd like to do now is focus on a few more, perhaps, dare I say, positive or perhaps enlightening aspects.
Positive solutions. we like to talk about positive action and positive solutions.
And our show is, after all, Universal Soul Love, and past few shows haven't sounded like Universal Soul Love.
We don't like to be too fear-based or paranoid. We like to sort of talk about what we can do rather than what we can't do.
I'd like to talk about the other side of all of this, because everyone talks about the fact that we're going through a shift, and of course, in our world, things are not just black, they're white.
And many things happening, and many things happening on many levels of reality.
And many people talk about the fact that humanity itself is going to be changing. The earth itself is going to be changing and cleansing itself. So I have heard, Marshall, people put this into context. That is, that while the death of so many people will obviously be a catastrophe, on the other hand, that if the Illuminati and the elite don't get the upper hand, that this is an opportunity for us to change our civilization from a materialistic civilization that exploits the earth to something which is much more attuned with the earth. And also, people talk about going from the third dimension to the fifth dimension and actually evolving. And I think that even Alexander Mides talks about that. I have heard, Marshall, and I think you yourself, I was very impressed and inspired by an article that you wrote recently stating that if you can just for a moment not think about Nibiru as the destroyer, but rather the destroyer of the status quo, and understand that all of life is always changing, and possibly for the better, then if we try our best to honor our planet and, you know, perhaps to do what we can to survive, is it not true that we may evolve into higher spiritual beings and our earth may be given the chance to cleanse itself, and we could start again in a better way?
Well, I mean, I've spent many years talking about a dark cloud coming, and my focus right now is on the silver lining. In chaos, in chaos is opportunity. The last flyby, Moses used the chaos of the last flyby to secure the freedom of the Hebrews. All right? This is celebrated every Passover. And this time, what we have is something that's even grander. We do have a possibility here to secure the freedom of our species. We are a slave species. People just don't like to admit that, but that is the fact. We are a slave species.
So you're saying that we were genetically created to be slaves?
No, we still are slaves.
I think the debt-based system is a grand scheme, and they were very clever to create that and put everybody to work. But then, oh, God.
We are still a slave system. Look, They want as many of us to die as possible because we are prolific. We breed like rabbits. Give us a bottle of Viagra and a case of Ripple wine and we could achieve wonders. Okay? They do not see us as, they just call us eaters, all right?
We're consumers, human resources.
No, we're eaters. We're eaters, okay? They don't see us any differently than we see farm-raised catfish.
Right.
Okay? And the problem that when, you know, people have a noble view of the world, and they care about other people, is it's really difficult to grasp with the fact that you have these kind of monsters. It's the reason why when when Chamberlain came back from Nazi Germany waving a piece of paper and saying peace in our time, a lot of people believed it because that's what they wanted to believe. And then Hitler rolled right through the Ardennes, and that was the rest of that. And so, you know, you had people like Winston Churchill, who he was mocked and ridiculed because he kept saying this is what he was going to do. Well, he was right, and then he became the man of the hour. So the point here is people tend to cling to the bliss of ignorance like jealous lovers, all right? And they don't want to hear that reality. Now, in terms of what is going to happen, all right, thinking that you can save the world is a fool's game, period. You're stupid. If you think you're going to do that, you're stupid. You're as dumb as a sack of hammers. Because the vast majority of people, 6 out of 7 people, are going to perish. And they're not going to know what the heck's happening until probably near the day that they die. And then they're not going to believe it. All right? This is just what is going to happen.
Gee, Marshall, I thought you were going to talk about a silver lining there.
Well, hang around, okay? You know, it's, I'm not telling you that we're all going to wake up one day and start singing, let's buy the world a Coke. But there are people who are in awareness and have been since they were children. They tend to be in their 40s and olders. And these, you know, I'm working right now with a group of individuals, and we're organizing sustainable communities.
Well, this is how Lana and I started out with this show. We started out with very high aspirations, and we were working with New Earth Nation, New Earth Project, and many other groups. We wanted to set up self-sustainable living communities, and we were very gung-ho about that. We're working with a lot of life coaches and life workers. We still are. We still promote kindness, compassion, and empathy. And, we have high ideals. However, you know, there's a realization that things have escalated very quickly in the world, as you're saying. So,
Can I ask you a question? Can you shoot a rifle?
Yes.
Are you ready, willing, and capable of shooting and killing an attacker?
I've had a gun license, concealed weapons license.
You didn't answer my question. Are you ready, willing, and capable to shoot an attacker?
I do whatever I have to.
Are you ready, willing, and capable? If you are being attacked, you got a cannibal, a zombie, a whacked out, a gangbanger. This is after there is law and order. Are you willing to defend yourself?
I'm not sure about an actual person. I've not been in that situation.
I'm all for self-protection and self-defense of myself or my family members or a loved one or someone who's, I'll protect an innocent. I was a constable. I've been a private detective. I can do that. I have the mental capacity to defend myself, kill someone, kill an animal. I'll do what I have to survive or protect. But that's not my focus. That's not my, you know, I don't focus on
I think what you're saying.
The answer is yes. I can
you
kill
are going to, on one hand, you're going to have to walk humbly with your God. And on the other hand, you're going to have to be able to draw a bead on someone that's going to come and kill you and your family, and you drop them dead in their tracks like you would a rabid dog. And on the other hand, you are still able to walk humbly with your God. This is the kind of world it's going to be when this breaks down. People have a lot of, you know, there's this, what I call this shelter mentality that people have about this. It's like, we're just going to figure out how to get safe from the, you know, this and that and whatnot. And then after that, we're smart people and we'll figure it out. No, you won't.
Yes.
No, you won't. Okay.
But Marshall, that's what I like about your approach. Now. It's very practical. And I guess I would call this probably the light warrior approach. We, David and I have had endless discussions between ourselves and with other people. We we find that in our the camp of people that we attract, I mean, unfortunately, people are getting a bit confused by us because we're light workers, we're also warriors,
well, we're guardians,
we're vegetarians, but we're also survivalists. And I think you're very right, Marshall.
Yeah, I think I would call
that being a light warrior.
We take a very balanced approach to this, a spiritual warrior approach. And I don't believe that there's any... we have a lot of people in our network who are activists, social activists, who are who'd love to take on the elite and, you know, the occupiers and Anonymous and whatnot. I don't think there's any use in trying to go up against... a government or a military. I think it's best to walk away from it. And if you get attacked, you fight back. And it's as simple as that.
I hear my philosophy about confrontation is the best way to deal with confrontation is to be somewhere else.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
You walk away from.
You've got to learn how to get off the radar. Okay.
Sure.
And the thing that I find with a lot of folks, you know, when they came out with the prepper shows, I had all kinds of Hollywood producers calling me left and right. And it was really annoying because, you know, first off, I said, look, I'm not going to get on television with a hula skirt and scratch myself for your entertainment. Okay? I think what you're doing is dumb because it's fear-based. And it's all about confrontations and contraptions.
Right.
This is going to be a 7 to 10 year tribulation. You don't do it with fear, confrontation, and contraptions. Okay? You got to go at it with a love-based strategy of comfort and continuation.
Right.
That's how you're going to get through it. But everyone fights. Nobody runs. All right, when you have to do it. And that is going to be a real reality of it for a period of time, but not forever. It's not going to be this Mad Max world. All right, what the ancient Egyptians tell us is we're going to go through a period called the Great Winnowing. And this is going to happen during the pole shift. And this event is going to instill so much fear. All right, it's going to be so... that the great winnowing, what it does is whatever's in your heart is amplified 100-fold. If fear is in your heart, that's amplified 100-fold. If love is in your heart, that is amplified 100-fold. Now, if it's fear, you're just going to flicker out like a light bulb. Blip, 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 done. That's all. You're just going to die of fright. That's what the ancient Egyptians are telling us. All right? So... you need to, you know, when I'm talking about, and I think the article you're referring to is my article, God's Mission and Planet X. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And in God's Mission and Planet X, what I'm saying, you know, because I've really had to grapple with this over the years. And it became obvious to me back in about 2005 of what the agenda was, which is to create as much death as possible. And there's a very logical reason for it, okay? During the tribulation, we are going to be unshackled. We're going to be free. We're going to be miserable, but we're going to be free. Now, what the elites want to do is as soon as things start to settle down, they want to get the shackles back on us. How are they going to do that? Well, they're going to come up, talk to the survivors, and they're going to say, we got food, we got medicine, we got building materials, we got seeds, like the Svalbard seed ball. Go to their website, see where it, tell me where it says, we're doing this for the love of humanity, and we're going to freely share this. Hell no. Monsanto underwrote it, and the poster child is Bill Gates. Excuse me. You know, these are like not in the spiritual column. All right, so what they're going to want to do is they're going to come up and they're going to want to say to people, it's real simple. Sign on the dotted line. Accept slavery under right. our control, and then we will share these things with you. Now, if there are 7 billion people on the planet, all right, they're little tokens, they're little inducements, so to speak, aren't going to go very far. But right. if you've only got a half a billion, or ideally a quarter of a billion people left on the planet, wow, now you got a lot of mileage on these goodies, okay? It's a real inducement, okay? So that's really what their strategy is. And the point here is, if people can get through this, and they can survive with their humility and their dignity intact, with hope for the future, they're going to have an option to say no. Now, if they say no, then that comes with a consequence, because the elites always have a 1-2 trick. First comes the carrots, then comes the stick. So you say no, you're saying no to the, not to the carrots, you're saying no to the stick. That's going to hurt. So the issue for us is that enough of us are willing to say no.
Right. Well, I like the way you speak well. I mean, I like everything that you've said, because it's sort of, you know, I can understand this, because it's within my own experience as a private investigator. 50% of my work was with... was in criminal defense investigation as a public defender investigator, and I saw human nature, and I hate to be cynical, but I have seen how this works, and I think you have to just really read between the lines and not hear what people's words are, but really read the emotional content and the body language and be able to size people up very quickly and know what their motives are. And I like to keep my integrity. My integrity is very important to me. But I think what you're saying is, you don't ignore the issues. You take it head on. You take on the issues directly. Whatever the problem is, you don't ignore it. But you're not fear-based. You're not paranoid. And you really look at the problem, and you find the practical, positive solutions to them. And, you know, what you said was, I really appreciate the way you... said that.
Well, thank you. Let me tell you, does humanity survive? It's a given. Okay, take it to the bank. Does humanity rebuild? It's a given. Take it to the bank. Does humanity go to space? It's a given. Take it to the bank. Now, what this is all about, the real issue of concern,
we have 2 minutes left,
is how we go to space. That is what all of the other races in the galaxy want to know. Are we going to go to space like Anunnaki stormtroopers, or are we going to have a Star Trek future? That's where it really lies. Okay? I'm for a Star Trek future.
It sounds wonderful. Look, we've got to finish up now. We've only got 2 minutes left. But look, Marshall, thank you very much. It's absolutely fascinating. I'm sure a lot of people are gobsmacked with what you've said. But we've ended on a very inspiring moral note.
Yeah, a very positive note. And I really appreciate, like I said, I appreciate the way that you did this show with us, this interview. This was a really good interview, I think. And
glad you enjoyed it.
So thank you. Thank you very much, Marshall. It'd be lovely to have you on our show again.
Absolutely.
Maybe before the shit hits the fan.
let's do it.
All right. And to all of our listeners out there, This is Lana Love.
And David Love.
And this is Goodbye from Universal Soul Love.
See you next time.
Bye.